From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey everyone, I'm broadcasting today from Detroit, where we are filming a new episode of They Might Be Saints, the Blessed Solanus Casey episode. And this new season coming out of They Might Be Saints is going to be a good one. We've got Michael McGivney, the founder of the Knights of Columbus, Blessed Solanus Casey, Blessed Francis Xavier Silos, Augustus Tolton, the first Black American priest, and also Nelson Baker from Buffalo. Venerable. So we've got a great lineup going ahead, and this week we are filming the next episode with more to come. So stay tuned to theymightbesaints.com for more information on the weekly series, which airs on Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Eastern or 5 p.m. Eastern only on EWTN. And we're excited today. We've got a great show ahead for you today. We'll be talking with Father Thomas Daly. He's the author of Behold This Heart. Of course, this is the month of the Sacred Heart, and so it's a perfect time to talk about his brand new book. And coming up this on the 26th will be the 40th anniversary of the alleged apparitions happening at Bosnia-Herzegovina, known as Medjugorje. Many people, many listeners of this show especially, miracle-minded Catholics, are well aware of those apparitions that have been going on allegedly since 1981. We'll be talking with perhaps the top Mariologist in the United States, and that is Dr. Mark Miller-Vali. He'll be breaking it down, telling us what's the latest in regards to what's going on there in Medjugorje. Later in the show, we'll be taking a look at the 365 Days with Mary project, like we always do. We'll be looking at the Kazan icon of the Mother of God in Moscow, Russia, and that's from the year 1701. We'll also be talking about the Might Be Saint of the Day, that is for today's date, Blessed Michelina de Pissarro, and we'll be looking at an interesting question of the week, which is, everybody knows there are different rules, some of them are obtuse and archaic, perhaps, of canonizations, but what about the miracles? When can that second miracle come into play that elevates somebody from blessed to saint? So we'll try to answer that question later in the show. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week. People who connect to the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter get miracle stories each and every day from around the world, so you can connect to that and join the thousands of other followers who check out the miracle news and those things that relate to miracles. And people who know me and my work, and I talk about this a lot, my patron saint of MiracleHunter.com is Blessed Carlo Acutis. He was the young man who died at a young age of leukemia, and he's moved very quickly along the path to sainthood, going from venerable to blessed just last year, and they've got another miracle that they're considering for him that will make him a saint. So very exciting, and the reason why I consider him my patron saint is because as a young man, he built some websites that cataloged the Eucharistic miracles of the world and Marian apparitions and all the things that I put on my website as well. So he's a great inspiration for me in the research on miracles. And so it was kind of exciting news for me because Carlo Acutis, he is being featured in a new exhibit and film, and people consider him the modern apostle of the Eucharist. And he continues his work of evangelization as his life continues to inspire devotion and art. Now, Carlos Acutis was an Italian teenager who died in 2006, and he became the first millennial to be declared blessed in October of this past year. And he's a computer programmer, a gamer. He loves soccer and the Eucharist, and there's been so much interest. Even on EWTN, we've seen numerous specials done about his life. And so this month, there's a new exhibit about his life at a shrine in northwest Italy, and that was reported on Catholic News Agency. And the Italian Sanctuary of the Blessed Virgin of the Gate in Asti, there's an exhibit about Carlo Acutis on display till June 27th. And this exhibit accompanies a relic of Blessed Carlo, which has been present at the shrine since June and will remain there as well. And so the exhibit consists of 25 interactive panels with photos and texts about the life of the blessed and QR codes to scan so you could find out listen to testimonies of his mother and see videos from his beatification in Assisi. So this is part biographical, part fictional, but this is something to check out if you are in that part of the world, and hopefully that'll be online for people to check out at some point in the future as well. So connect to The Miracle Hunter on Facebook for more information on miracle stories happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. Let's take a look at Catholic Club Trivia. Last week, we had a question about Father Al Schwartz. And Father Al Schwartz, of course, is a very modern saint. He died in 1992, on March 16th, to be exact. And that is one of the most recently occurring people who have passed away, who have gone on to become venerable in the United States. And so the question is, who is the only American venerable to have died after Father Al? And that answer was June 3rd, Patrick Peyton in 1992. So slightly after Father Al Schwartz was Patrick Peyton, known as the Rosary Priest. And of course, Alphonse Gallegos is another very recent one, and we've featured all of these on our episodes of They Might Be Saints. So for this week's question, we're talking about Medjugorje, which is the alleged apparition phenomena, which is still under study by the Catholic Church. And so the question is, what Marian apparitions, also beginning in 1981, has been recognized by the Vatican as supernatural? So Medjugorje started in 1981, but there's another apparition that happened in 1981 that has been approved. So the question is, which Marian apparition, also beginning in 1981, has been recognized by the Vatican as supernatural? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Thomas Daly about one of my favorite devotions, and that is the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Stay with us for that.
Back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. One of my favorite devotions is the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and we just celebrated that very recently, and we put a program on EWTN television called Explore, Pray Le Moniel, as part of the Explore series, where we travel around the world and talk about the famous devotions of the world and those miracle stories that have inspired the faith and fascination of believers for centuries. And there's a brand new book that's worth talking about this month, the month of the Sacred Heart, and it's called Behold This Heart, and it's from Father Thomas Daly. We welcome to the program today, Father Thomas.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks for being on the program today. And this is a great time to take a look at this book. And the title of the book is Behold This Heart, St. Francis de Sales and Devotion to the Sacred Heart. And I think many Catholics, perhaps there's a new sort of, maybe it's not that new, the enthronement movement, where people are enthroning the image of the Sacred Heart in their homes. But perhaps this is sort of an older devotion that's making a comeback. Why is the devotion to the Sacred Heart important even in our modern world now?
Well, I think very basically because the devotion to the Sacred Heart is in many respects a focusing of our attention on our human hearts. And because every single one of us has one, and every single one of us knows that it is of the heart that we really live and thrive and make our key decisions, that seeking a union or perfection of that human heart in the Sacred Heart is certainly something that that gets our attention and moves our devotion.
And it's a famous devotion, and many people don't necessarily know the origin stories as it relates to St. Margaret Mary and perhaps beyond that, before that. How did the devotion to the Sacred Heart first begin?
Well, strictly speaking, it began at Calvary when the heart of Jesus was pierced there on the cross. And for centuries, preachers and writers had spoken of that wounded heart of Jesus. But the real origins of the contemporary devotion do go back to Pere Le Moniel and the revelations given to St. Margaret Mary Alacoque. This was about 1673 to 1675 were the great revelations in which Jesus appeared to her, showing his Sacred Heart and imploring her in many ways to spread a devotion to that heart so that the world would come to recognize the depth and extent of God's love for the world. More specifically, the Sacred Heart, Jesus, in revealing his Sacred Heart, asked St. Margaret Mary to establish a universal feast day of the Sacred Heart, which eventually came about. The First Friday devotions of prayer and adoration for an hour, a holy hour, were part of the request that Jesus made to St. Margaret Mary. And so from her experience and through the sort of missionary evangelizing work of the Jesuits around the world and the Visitation Sisters around the world, this devotion comes to us now today.
Absolutely. And when we talk about St. Francis de Sales and St. Jean de Chantal, for example, what is their role in all this? I know in the subtitle of the book, you have St. Francis de Sales and Devotion to the Sacred Heart. How is he connected to all this?
Well, I think we can appreciate even more St. Margaret Mary's experience when we realize that she was a sister in the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary, which is the religious order founded by St. Francis de Sales and St. Jean de Chantal about almost a century, not quite a century before St. Margaret Mary. And it is the spirituality of St. Francis de Sales that championed the role of the heart, both the human heart and the Sacred Heart, as being central to what he called a devout life, or what we would call holiness. So St. Margaret Mary was steeped in that tradition, and the understanding that she had of the place of the Sacred Heart in the life of the Church would certainly have been founded on that context of Salesian spirituality.
And when we talk about the heart, there are different, you can talk about it metaphorically, you can talk about it biologically, and when it comes to the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, we have a very specific image in which Jesus shows his heart inflamed with a cross on top, crowned, and the crown of thorns surrounding the heart. What does all that symbolism mean? Why is that image so specific, and how does that relate to the devotion itself?
Well, certainly there are hundreds of different images associated with devotion to the Sacred Heart. And really, I think that's one of the keys to its popularity and its universality is the imagery of the heart. The particular one which you're referencing is essentially the image that St. Margaret Mary saw, that she experienced. And it's combining the heart, you know, the classic symbol of love and of humanity, with the cross and the crown of thorns, saying that it is the suffering of Jesus's heart, literally the pouring out of every last drop of blood from that Sacred Heart, through that suffering, through that depth of love, the Sacred Heart becomes the image of God's enduring love for all of humanity.
We're talking today with Father Thomas F. Daly, the author of the new book, Behold This Heart, St. Francis de Sales and Devotion to the Sacred Heart. And when we look at this devotion, which, as you say, stems back to the, in a very central way, to the visions experienced by St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, dating back to 1673 and the devotion that sprung up from that, we see it in our modern sense as well. And in your book, Behold This Heart, I think you do a nice job of sort of giving 9 reflections on the Sacred Heart and sort of showing how they can even apply to our lives today. Let's talk about that a little bit. We have all these worldly responsibilities, for example, and they can be very distracting, perhaps, and they're necessary in many ways. But How can you live the devout life despite all these distractions?
Well, that is essentially the core element of all of the spirituality of St. Francis de Sales, whose famous book, The Introduction to the Devout Life, was written precisely to advocate the idea that all of us are called to a life of holiness, even in the midst of all of our responsibilities in the world. And his sort of central idea was that our devotion or our holiness is not something we add on to all of the other responsibilities we have. I mean, there's only so much time in a day, but that it really infuses everything that we do. And so he said that we become saints precisely in and through our vocations in the world. Now, because it's a spiritual quest, a key to that is, of course, prayer. And so Francis de Sales explained a method for praying, what we would call meditating, that the monks and nuns in the monasteries would do for a great amount of time, but it doesn't necessarily require a great amount of time. And really, anyone can do it. So these nine meditations in the book follow that methodology of St. Francis de Sales, focus on nine gospel stories in which the heart of Jesus plays a prominent role. And following the method of Francis de Sales shows us how to pray with that story, to spend however much time we can. And as I said, it doesn't have to be a lot of time, but focusing our attention, focusing our minds and our hearts and our wills on what is happening in that gospel story in reference to the heart of Jesus. As elucidated, I include a lot of the thinking of Francis de Sales to spur that meditative kind of prayer. We can, at least it's my hope in the book, in a sense, get in touch with this sacred heart and receive the graces from it.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Thomas Daly about his new book, Behold This Heart. And this is a perfect time to talk about it during the month devoted to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And one of the reflections you have is one that I think is so important for everyone in every station in life, every vocation, the idea of how to listen for and discern God's will for your life. How does the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the reflection on that connect with that?
Well, I think it does in the sense that the devotion to the Sacred Heart emphasizes this simply being in the presence of Jesus. The practice, for instance, of adoration before the Blessed Sacrament, a holy hour. What do we do when we are in adoration? Effectively, we do nothing. In the sense that there's no great actions involved, but we adore the Lord by being in his presence, by sort of quieting down our own minds and hearts and souls, and simply listening. I mean, if the Lord Jesus were to appear to us, for example, we wouldn't say anything, probably as a matter of shock, but we wouldn't need to say anything. We would be in a place where we could listen and receive and take from the Lord the graces that he wishes to offer to us. So I think devotion to the Sacred Heart promotes this quiet, prayerful presence with Jesus that is at the heart of our union with him.
Very well put. The name of this book is Behold This Heart, from Father Thomas Daly, and you can get it from Sophia Institute Press. And there's this quote that I really like. It's St. Paul VI. He says about the Sacred Heart devotion, it's the most effective means of promoting the reform of life and the defeat of atheism, end quote. What does he mean by that?
It's a pretty daring quote, but and I wish I could ask him exactly what he meant by it, but I think what he's saying is we reform our lives. That is to say, we transform ourselves, we better ourselves. We reform our lives primarily from the inside out, so to speak. So it's by our hearts. It's by the perfecting of our hearts and our wills that we then transform and perfect our exterior lives. So by uniting ourselves with the Sacred Heart and thereby transforming our hearts, we can transform the actions of our lives. Second part of the quote, the connection to atheism, builds on that by saying that, you know, if we look first to the heart, the human heart, a heart that every one of us has, a very natural thing to all of us, and realize that that heart is fulfilled, satisfied, its longings, its desires, its seeking for meaning is satisfied in something or really someone beyond us, that is, we would say God, then in a sense, moving from this natural heart to the Sacred Heart, kind of puts an end to the atheistic assumption that there is no God. We strive for meaning. We strive for our hearts to be filled. They can only be filled by something beyond us, and that something beyond is God.
Beautifully put. We're talking about this new book. It's called Behold This Heart, St. Francis de Sales and Devotion to the Sacred Heart. And we're joined today by the author, Father Thomas F. Daly. Some 9 reflections that he has in this book. And when you put this book together, what was your hope for the average person who perhaps has a devotion or an interest in the Sacred Heart and they want to grow closer to Jesus and his Sacred Heart? How is this book going to help them with that?
Well, my hope for the book was, in a sense, the same as Francis de Sales's, which is to say that anyone can follow this devotion and benefit from it, and to provide a little bit of means to do that, a little bit of guidance in terms of how to pray, how to be devoted to the Sacred Heart, how to draw closer to that love that God has for us. And if that happens for anyone, then it's been a great success.
Sounds great. The name of the book, Behold This Heart, St. Francis de Sales and Devotion to the Sacred Heart. You can get it from Sophia Institute Press, sophiainstitute.com, anywhere Catholic books are sold. Thank you so much for being with us, Father Thomas Daly, and for your great contribution with this book, Behold This Heart.
Thank you, Michael, and God bless your work.
God bless. That was Father Thomas Daly. Great reflections on the Sacred Heart of Jesus. You can get this in the book, Behold This Heart, St. Francis de Sales, and Devotion to the Sacred Heart. Check that one out through Sophia Institute Press. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the mailbag and trying to answer the question, when can canonization miracles come into play? Are there any rules that need to be considered? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions that relate to miracles, and I try my best to answer them. And technically, when I'm traveling, there'll be more speaking engagements in the future. Feel free to send me an email to invite me to your parish. But I give these presentations, and at the very end, I do a question and answer section, which I think is a lot of fun because people have questions about the miraculous, and sometimes I've got the answer. But I love getting your emails, and we have a question from Scott who writes in, Dear Miracle Hunter, 2 miracles are used in the canonization process, but can the miracles have occurred at any point, even while the saint was still alive? Are there any rules about the sequence of events when it relates to miracles for sainthood? Thank you, Scott. Well, thanks, Scott, for your question. It's a good one. And I think one distinction that has to be made is that miracles that happen in the life of a saint, we're talking about Father Solanus Casey, for example, there were many, many miracles that happened through his intercession. He's considered a thaumaturgical or wonder-working saint. But all those miracles that happened during his life cannot count for his canonization because they don't imply that he's in heaven at that point. Of course, they go in his canonization file and makes him look pretty good for those people in Rome who are reviewing his case. But miracles while they're still alive do not count. And what about miracles in after death? Of course, one miracle is required for beatification and a second for canonization. So when do those miracles have to happen? Well, the second miracle has to happen after the person has been decreed by Rome that they're going to be beatified. So theoretically, a person, sainthood cause, could stockpile miracles and play two miracles at once and have you hop from blessed to saint in all one shot, but they want you to do it in two steps. So they're kind of waiting for heaven to ratify the decision to canonize someone. So they'll declare them blessed first, then with the miracle, they become saint. So thank you, Scott, for that question. And we talk about these great cases like Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic, who we featured on an episode of They Might Be Saints. They actually found sort of an older miracle that related to the macular degeneration of a boy named Michael Mentzer, who through prayers and through a relic actually regained his sight back to 20/20. But that was a miracle that happened well before the beatification, decades in fact, and now they're in search of a second miracle. And we talk about these cases like Francis Xavier Silos. We're going to be doing an episode of him on They Might Be Saints. In his case, he was declared venerable and then blessed shortly thereafter because they had a miracle sort of in the wings. So they were able to go forward with that, but they're still waiting for that second miracle. And they've got a great case that I think probably will lead to his canonization sometime soon. So thanks, Scott, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or go through my website, miraclehunter.com, and perhaps we'll answer your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up. We have Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. We've got a different Marian devotion that actually lines up to every single day of the calendar year. And if you want more information on that project, you can go to this website, 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, download the app, or you can connect to the Facebook page of 365dayswithmary.com. And that will join you with 10,000 other followers who follow the Marian devotion of the day. So for today's date, we've got one of the most famous icons in the world, and that's the Kazan icon of the Mother of God from Russia in the year 1701. And the story goes that in 1689, there had been hymns that were sung at the Ascension Monastery in Moscow, and someone forgot to extinguish the candle before leaving the church. The candle fell, and the flames burned the church, but the Kazan icon did not suffer any damage. In the fire in the Kremlin in July 19, 1701, the palace and Ascension Monastery were consumed by flames, and during that fire, the daughter of the deceased prince entered the tomb and prayed before the icon. The icon remained behind, and in the course of an inventory to see what had been burned and removed from the church, they found the Kazan icon again. And no one knew how it got there, and no one had taken it from the church. It had miraculously returned to its original spot. And so that is the Kazan icon of the Mother of God from Moscow and the miracle happening in the year 1701. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the 365 Days with Mary project on the website, pick up the book, download the app, or connect to the Facebook feed and join any of the 10,000 followers who want to know 365 Days with Mary, which is the one for that day's date. Now let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week where we look at the saints or the people along the paths of sainthood that line up for each day of the year. So for June 19th, we have Blessed Michelina de Pissarro. And when we look at these potential saints, we're talking about people who are servants of God, people who are venerables, people who are blesseds, but not yet saints. They might be saints. And this connects to my television series, which airs on EWTN called They Might Be Saints, airing on Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Eastern and Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern. We're looking at miracle workers to martyrs to ordinary people who are living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. And these are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. So for today, on June 19th, we have Blessed Michelina de Pissarro. And she was born in the year 1300 in Urbino, Italy. And according to her story, she was born to a wealthy Italian nobility. At the age of 12, she was given in an arranged marriage to Duke Malatesta. He's the Lord of Pissarro in Italy. And she was the mother of one after that marriage. And she was widowed in 1320, and her son died soon after. Now, her chambermaid, confidant, and friend, Blessed Soriana, helped her deal with her grief and helped her become stronger in her faith. And left alone, Michelina gave away all her wealth to widows, orphans, and those in prison for debts. And she joined the Franciscan Third Order and gave the rest of her life to prayer and penance. And her family thought that she had been going crazy from the grief. They had her briefly locked up, which they thought was going to be for her own good. But she was eventually released and resumed her chosen life as the Third Order Franciscan. In the year 1347, when Blessed Francis Zaffardini of Pesaro, she co-founded the Confraternity of the Annunciation. And that's a mission to help the poor, care for the sick, and bury the dead. And several times she received visions of Jesus speaking to her from the cross. Later in life, she went to make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and she received the stigmata. So quite an interesting life. That's Blessed Michelina de Pesaro. She died on June 19, 1356 in Pesaro of natural causes, and she was later beatified in 1737 by Pope Clement XII. And that's the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Michelina de Pesaro. For more information on her fascinating stories or any of the other stories of those people who might be saints, you can go to the website theymightbesaints.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to the top Mariologist in the United States, that's Dr. Mark Miravalli, about the controversial apparitions at Medjugorje. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. When we talk about Marian apparitions throughout history, of course, we point at Fatima as the gold standard of Marian apparitions. And we look at Lourdes and Guadalupe as perhaps the three great ones in the collection throughout the ages of Marian apparitions throughout Christian history. But there's one that stands above in modern times that has probably more devotees and more interest than any of the others that have been claimed in recent years. And that, of course, relates to Our Lady of Medjugorje. And we've got the 40th anniversary coming up of those alleged apparitions happening starting on June 26th, 1981. Those dates back 40 years now. And they were six children who received those messages, but they're not children any longer. But the messages still continue to this day. We're so excited to talk about this phenomenon because there's such great interest around the world and people want to know what will be happening next. And many people are extremely interested, having visited themselves or with an interest in visiting the future. It is now an official Marian pilgrimage site. So things are opening up in a certain sort of a way. And we're excited today to talk with Dr. Mark Miravalli, a top Mariologist in the United States and a professor of theology at Franciscan University at Steubenville. Welcome back to the show today, Dr. Miravalli.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a joy.
So this is a big anniversary that we have. Of course, we had the Fatima anniversary a couple years ago, 100 years, but now we're at the 40-year mark as it relates to Our Lady of Medjugorje. There's many questions that still persist about these apparitions, and I want to have you on today to talk a little bit about the significance of this year 40. Is this a big deal? Should people be excited about the things that are around the corner, perhaps with an approval? Where does the church stand regarding Medjugorje?
Yeah, well, I do think it's a big deal, Michael. And, you know, I personally am happy to testify to the graces I believe I have received, regardless of what I've done with them, but the generosity on the side of Our Lady through the Medjugorje apparitions. I certainly personally believe that they're absolutely authentic. But more importantly, you know, what's the position of the church? And so that's gone through an evolution. You know, very briefly, the first bishop was in favor and then changed his position. Then there was a first report sent to the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, which was a negative response, a negative conclusion. And the local authorities were asked to once again redo the evaluation in light and under the guidance of the ex-Yugoslav bishops. So you have a 1991 Zadar statement, which allows people to go to Medjugorje. It gives it what's called a non constat position, which means it doesn't approve it, but it does not condemn it, and that the bishops would take pastoral responsibility for people going. And that, in a certain sense, still remains the official position at this point, but there's been further development, of course. Within the last 2 years, Pope Francis has designated Medjugorje as an official pilgrimage site, which means that bishops and priests and dioceses and parishes can pilgrimage to Medjugorje, which in itself is a form of approval, certainly. It's a form of a church sanction, although there still has not been a final definitive judgment on the level of authenticity. But I would just say with that, Michael, clearly Archbishop Hozer, who has been Pope Francis's representative in Medjugorje, who's been extremely positive, saying things that Medjugorje is a spiritual center of Europe and could be the spiritual center of the world in terms of conversion if people would respond, while not technically speaking about the status of approval, that's about as encouraging as you can get in terms of the spiritual fruits emanating globally from the Medjugorje event. So that's been a rather significant development. And even during the month of May, when the Holy Father organized praying the rosary from Marian sites throughout the world, Medjugorje was one of those Marian sites. So that is, again, a limited form of church approval in terms of encouraging people to go and having a sense of peace for those who do go.
Absolutely. I thought that was a very big deal when they announced those Marian shrines from around the world. And we have those, Fatima, Guadalupe, Lourdes, the very top Marian shrines on that list that are the most highly approved, and Medjugorje was amongst that list. So that I thought that was significant. When we talk about what will happen next, we want to differentiate between the approval of people who can show their devotion by going on pilgrimage there, but the supernatural character of the event is always the test to find out whether the church believes truly that Mary appeared at that place. What needs to happen next? I know there was the Ruini Commission, in which set up by Pope Benedict XVI in 2010, and that report went to Pope Francis, and he's commented on it in various ways. But what will happen next? I think people have even seen that report; it's been leaked to the internet. What might the Pope do next?
Well, it's interesting because, as you say, actually, when the Pope came back on the plane trip from Fatima, he made some positive statements about the Ruini Commission. Well, of course, the rest of the world didn't know quite what that meant because the Ruini Commission had not yet been published. And technically, as you say, it has not been officially released, but it's been leaked with a fair certainty of being authentic. And what was in that report was that the first seven apparitions at Medjugorje were believed to be supernatural. So there's two possibilities, Michael, of where we can go from this point. One is it can continue as it is for many years. I mean, the apparitions at Knock went many years with just kind of a non constat, that is not approved but not condemned officially in terms of supernatural character, but having many, many visitors. And that continued until, Pope John Paul II showed up and said, "I'm here, to visit Our Lady of Knock." And then all of a sudden it kicked into the approval category. Mm-hmm. So we could, A, see the present status go for many years where people are pilgrimaging and the church has given it an official sanction. Once again, as Chesedin might say, the church would not have given it an official sanction if it thought it was erroneous and false. You don't want to push that too far, but it's also true that there's great discernment before the church establishes an official pilgrim site. So, A, it could continue as it is, or B, of course, there could be a definitive declaration of a constat de supernaturalitate, right, of a statement of saying these consist of a supernatural origin. It's hard to tell which one of those two is going to happen in the near future. It may continue for a while as it is because it avoids some of the controversy and still allows pilgrimages to happen with full peace of heart. But this Pope is the Pope of Marian surprises too. Uh-huh. So you never know, Michael, what might come. As many people know, originally this Holy Father had mentioned, Our Lady's not a mailman. She doesn't come at a set time. And that's not a direct disapproval, but that's almost 180 degrees change from establishing an official pilgrimage site. So we have yet to see what comes. In either case, Medjugorje continues to share its fruits globally at this point.
We're talking today with Dr. Mark Miravalli, Mariologist and professor of theology at Franciscan University at Steubenville. And one of the interesting things about the Medjugorje phenomena is the apparitions have gone on for many years, and perhaps many more than those very highly recognized and approved apparitions, Fatima, Lourdes, Guadalupe. And by segmenting out the first seven, that's sort of a smaller number of apparitions that could be approved or separated as the children were first together for those apparitions, and maybe they went their own separate ways after that, and we're still continuing to receive visions on their own. But is there any precedence? I know Fatima, the children of Fatima received those on the 13th of the month, they received those visions, then Sister Lucia went on to receive later visions. But do we have any precedence in the church for an approval of just part of a set of apparitions and perhaps other apparitions not being considered in the same under the same church scrutiny?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Although I feel humbled to be asked that by the Miracle Hunter, who has the best idea of precedence in terms of social media. But I would say this, Michael. Yes, it's not unusual to have a bishop say, "Study these." This happened in San Nicolas, Argentina, for example. You also had cases like Our Lady of Lourdes in France, where you had daily apparitions for over 40 years. So it is unusual, but it's not unusual, I would say, that the visionary continues to have some accentuated form of supernatural communication after the main event, so to speak. For example, Sister Lucia continued to receive locutions into her final years, as is reported by several good sources. She gave the mysterious message before she died about how we're in the third day of the week of Fatima, and this was 1999. So I would say it's the length, I think, bespeaks the need of humanity right now. She's not coming because there's nothing, happening in heaven. She's coming because we have need of this maternal encouragement to live the gospel, to pray the rosary, to do the fasting. She calls for a two-day a week of fasting in whatever degree we can do that, to make Mass the gift of the day for the faithful, at least monthly confession, and to be seeking spiritual peace, which then leads to family and social and ultimately global peace. I think if we look at our headlines today, we can understand why she's continuing to come. The challenges are not deterring. They're, if anything, I believe they're growing. So I think the length bespeaks the importance of her message for the world today.
We're talking today with Dr. Mark Miravalli, Mariologist and Professor of Theology at Franciscan University at Steubenville. You can check him out at motherofallpeoples.com. And we talk about perhaps the first seven visions of Medjugorje may get some approval through a formal process through the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith or a statement from Pope Francis. It's possible, perhaps, that only that segment gets approved. Has there been any cases where one segment is approved and one segment is condemned? We have cases like where, like you say, the visions continue on and perhaps the church doesn't comment on them. But is there ever a case where you see approval at the beginning or at some segment and then a condemnation in the later years? Is that even possible?
Yeah, I don't think we have any case of that. Something close might be La Salette, but where they just distinguished, the earlier messages from later messages, mm-hmm. which they found to be more unclear or vague or in some cases dubious. But I don't think you have cases where there's the confirmation of supernatural authenticity, and later there's the condemnation by the same bishop, from concerning the same visionary that these are not of God. I think Mary, being the mother that she is, I mean, being a visionary is fun for about 3 days, and then it's a lifetime of victimhood.
Sure.
People attack you. They say you're a liar. You're this is all manipulation and things like that. So I'm not surprised that Our Lady would continue to have communication for those who faithfully respond to being a visionary. Well, you know, there are certainly cases. I would use the cases of things like Christina Gallagher, unfortunately, in Ireland, where there seemed to be good indications of authenticity, but then there was a turn that took place which did not bespeak authenticity. So that gets challenging, Michael, because people say, well, women, I experienced graces from this. Yeah, but, you know, every visionary is a human being, and they can also be contaminated. They can make bad choices afterwards. But but in terms of the church status, there's not a case of official apparition approval in a constante supernaturalitate followed by a constante non supernaturalitate. And that gives you encouragement that it's got the approval, you can continue in peace.
Absolutely. It's such an interesting case, and there are so many ways to analyze it. And one of the aspects of Medjugorje that is often pointed to are the fruits of Medjugorje. And when the church gives its approval, or at least analyzes an apparition as it's ongoing or as it is wrapped up, it considers the fruits of an apparition. How does that factor in, considering that 1978 statement, the norms of the congregation for proceeding and judging alleged private revelations and apparitions? How does that the fruits of a place factor into a decision, perhaps, to declare that it's authentic?
Yeah, well, you know, Cardinal Ratzinger said in an early work that in terms of apparitions, the examination of message should be first, but then quickly followed by the fruits. Why? Because this is the biblical criteria that Jesus gives you. You'll know a tree by its fruits, and bad trees don't give good fruits. Well, when you have Cardinal Schönborn, for example, saying, if it wasn't for Medjugorje, my seminary would be empty. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the millions of conversions, but also the thousands of vocations that have come out of Medjugorje. You know, it's tough to argue with those. And I do find, and again, always assuming goodwill, but I find that sometimes people who present cases against Medjugorje begin by admitting the fruits, Michael. They say, well, okay, we grant the fruits, but let's put the fruits aside and let's look at this case or that case and that scandal. Well, what you're doing there is you're saying, well, you're granting the criteria that Jesus gave for authenticity, and then you're entering, you know, more minutiae that should not rank along the side of the spiritual fruits. So I don't think anyone denies or really can deny the global spiritual fruits of Medjugorje. Once again, my Archbishop Holzer, the Pope's representative in Medjugorje, the delegate, talks about Medjugorje being the greatest spiritual center of Europe and potentially the whole world. And obviously, Mike, when he says this, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, he's not talking about as opposed to the prayer and sacramental life of the church. He's talking about precisely because people are streaming to the prayer and sacramental life of the church at Medjugorje. That's why the confession lines are endless in Medjugorje, which is a great sign. So it's not like the apparition's off to the corner and no one's visiting the church for the sacraments. It's quite the contrary. It's the apparition's are leading people back to the heart of the prayer and sacramental life of the church, which is the ultimate manifestation of authentic fruits of the Spirit.
Absolutely. That's very well put. We've been talking today with Dr. Mark Miravalli. We've got the 40th anniversary of the alleged apparitions at Medjugorje. June 26th is that anniversary, and I think many people around the world are fascinated by this devotion and are very curious to find out what the church will do next in the years to come. And as we wrap up today, Dr. Miravalli, how can people straddle that line properly when we're waiting for the church's final judgment, and we want to be obedient to how the church judges, as we should with any case of private revelation, but we also see exciting things happening at Medjugorje with the approval of it as an official pilgrimage site and perhaps other recognitions. How do we straddle that line between being faithful to the church's judgment and also showing Mary her proper devotion?
Yeah, well, it's a very good question. And in this case, it's a little less of a line to straddle since the church has given Medjugorje an official pilgrimage status. That means You can come. You can come freely. You can come in obedience. Now, but even before that, Michael, it's important to say that by the church's own criteria, by her own judgment and history, a person can visit a reported apparition site even before the church makes a final decision, as long as they will be obedient to the final definitive judgment that the church gives. That's why, you know, the visionaries at Fatima, the apparitions weren't approved until 1930, and the apparitions happened in 1917. So does that mean all the people that believed in Fatima from 1917 to 1930 were disobedient? No, no. They can go when there's permission by the local bishop. There were some restrictions at Fatima. But in the Medjugorje case, you now have the further official confirmation that you can pilgrimage to Medjugorje in peace within total obedience to the church. And you're absolutely right. Obedience is the key when it comes to apparitions. We learn that from Faustina, from Padre Pio. Even when they're true and there's a time of temporary confusion, let us say, we always obey the church's appropriate authority. That pleases Our Lady. In this case, I think Our Lady was also much pleased that Pope Francis allowed and has now sanctioned official pilgrimages to Medjugorje, precisely because the Queen of Peace is very active there. And if anything we need in the world, both in our hearts and in society, it's the gift of peace, which comes only from Jesus through Our Lady, the Queen of Peace.
Very well put. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dr. Mark Miravalli, for joining us on today's show. People can check you out at motherofallpeoples.com for more information on your various activities as related to your research and writings about the Blessed Virgin Mary. Thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
My pleasure, Michael. God bless you and all our listeners.
God bless. That was Dr. Mark Miravalli. Great discussion about those apparitions at Medjugorje. We have the 40th anniversary, June 26th of this year. Many people around the world are very interested and excited about that Marian devotion. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guest, Father Thomas Daly, the author of Behold This Heart, and Dr. Mark Miravalli, talking to us about Medjugorje. And signups for my pilgrimage going to France are ending next month, so check it out at nativitypilgrimage.com/miraclehunter. We'll be going October 18th through 27th to see the Marian shrines of France, including Pontmain, which is celebrating in 2021 the 150th anniversary of those highly approved apparitions there, and La Salette, also an approved apparition, celebrating its 175th anniversary in 2021. So this is a great year to check out those very famous shrines of Mary. Of course, we'll be going to Lourdes and Paris, and we'll be seeing the Miraculous Medal. We're going to Lisieux. So various places, but sign up while you can. And that's, again, the signups end this month. So go to nativitypilgrimage.com/miraclehunter. And sign up for the newsletter on miraclehunter.com for more information on miracle stories, where I'll be speaking next, upcoming book releases, and upcoming episodes of They Might Be Saints and more. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.